Support for this podcast comes from the Fletcher School of Global Affairs at Tufts University. To start your future as a global changemaker, you must have context across fields like international business, cybersecurity, energy policy, and more. Don't just study global affairs, shape them. Visit fletcher.tufts.edu.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. The effort to improve public education over the past decade and a half has been all about the test. Ever since No Child Left Behind became the law of the land, students and schools are under significant pressure to meet academic benchmarks and to demonstrate adequate yearly progress.
Here in Massachusetts, that's meant focusing in a big way on the MCAS test to encourage proficiency in reading, math, and science. But what about character? Once upon a time, character education was one of the guiding principles of American education. From Thomas Jefferson to Horace Mann, the country's earliest intellectual leaders saw public education as a means to foster values like civic engagement, self-discipline, perseverance, and compassion.
But today, as schools try to do a better job teaching the basics, character education has been pushed aside. And maybe that explains a lot about what's wrong in America right now. A lack of character education might have influenced a lot of things, from growing income disparity to the recent financial meltdowns.
Which raises a huge question. Along with the reading, writing, and math, should schools also teach character? Our next guest says the answer is yes, emphatically, he says. And at least three public schools right here in Boston are leading the way and doing just that. Scott Sider is an assistant professor of education at Boston University and a lecturer in education at Harvard. He's the author of Character Compass, How Powerful School Culture Can Point Students Toward Success. And he joins us right now. Welcome to Radio Boston. Great to have you.
Thanks for having me.
So you looked at three public schools in Boston that are doing a great job with this mission of teaching character. But before we talk about them specifically, let's talk specifically about what we mean by character education. What are we talking about?
I think that's a great question, because I think one of the challenges to talking about character education is that people mean different things by that term. And so to start, I think it's useful to actually offer a definition of character, or the way that I'm gonna use character. So when I say character, I'm talking about the characteristics that enable an individual to act competently and morally. And some character strengths, you know, focus on the competence, some character strengths focus on the moral. And when we say character education, we're referring to any forms of teaching or learning that are strengthening one of those characteristics. And as I'm sure we'll get into, the three schools in my study focused on different aspects of character.
Right. Now, and before we get to those schools, you know, these days a lot of attention's on tests, on grades, extracurricular activities. This is sort of usually considered at the center of the educational effort. You would place character at the center of this sort of educational firmament. Why? And how did you become interested in this idea?
In some ways, I would actually say that we seem to be experiencing a little bit of a renaissance in the interest in character education, in the sense that, as you noted in your introduction, in 2001, the No Child Left Behind Act put an enormous focus on core subject areas, mathematics and English in particular, and schools were highly, incented to focus their efforts on that area. As we've shifted, our priorities with the race to the top approach to education, quite a number of schools have been thinking about, our students' performance on test scores is important, but what also matters to us is what they do with that knowledge as they go, as they go into college and into other pursuits beyond K-12 education. So I think we actually are starting to see schools really thinking about what are the character strengths that are going to be important to our students as they go out into the world.
And it seems like we're talking about a sort of immediate benefit to a group of students who, you want to sort of educate them in the best way possible. But we're also talking about what this means in a way for the evolution of the country in terms of moral fiber and fabric, right?
As you sort of alluded to in your introduction, in some ways character education is as old as public education itself. The founding fathers of public education really made the argument that one of the reasons we needed public education in our country was so that youth could be sort of, what could be instilled in youth were the character strengths that were going to allow them to be productive citizens and good workers. And we've seen ebbs and flows over over time. And I think what's in some ways leading to the Renaissance right now is that there's a newfound commitment, I'd say, in our country to educating all children. Mm. And I think that kind of recognizing that in order for all children to be successful, there are character strengths that can play a role in helping them to be successful in college and beyond.
Well, listeners, we're talking to Scott Sider about his book Character Compass. It's about three Boston public schools that have made teaching character a priority in a big way. We'd like to invite you into this conversation. Do you think schools can and should teach character? What about all that other stuff they need to focus on, like reading, writing, math, sports, the extracurriculars? Give us a call, 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. You can also post a comment on Facebook or Twitter at Radio Boston. So, Scott, let's talk about these schools in some detail. You spent time at Boston Preparatory Charter School, Boston Prep, Roxbury Prep, and the Academy of the Pacific Rim Charter Public School. These are all charter schools. They're all in Boston, two in Hyde Park, one in Roxbury. First of all, before we talk about how they're different, what do they have in common?
My goal as I was sort of starting to think about this research study was that I wanted to find three schools that were very, very similar to each other. So all three of these schools are urban charter schools. They're located within just a few miles of each other in the city of Boston. All three schools are high performing. All three schools serve largely low income youth of color. And all three schools describe character education as central to what they're doing. But what got me interested and what led me to choose these three schools is that when these three schools say we focus on character education, they actually mean three different things.
Mm. Well, let's talk about what it means. Start with Boston Prep. It focuses on moral character development, right? So what are we talking about there?
Exactly. Well, when we say moral character development, we mean that Boston Prep focuses particularly on the qualities like integrity and compassion and respect that we say these are the qualities that are important for successful interpersonal relationships and ethical behaviors. Mm-hmm. And so one way that the Boston Prep Charter School really focused on moral character strengths was through an ethical philosophy class. So this is a school that has grades 6 through 12, and at every single grade level, once a week, all of the students participate in a class on ethical philosophy, where they're literally reading how philosophers ranging from Rousseau to Aristotle to Gandhi wrote about the moral character strengths such as compassion and integrity, and then they do some reflecting upon the role of that particular thinker's work in their own lives. Mm.
So that's Boston Prep. Give us a quick sort of overview of Roxbury Prep.
Sure.
So their view of character development.
Great. And that's a great example, because Roxbury Prep is in some ways on the other side of that continuum of competence mm-hmm. versus moral when we talk about character. So Roxbury Prep is particularly focused on performance character. And when we say performance character, we mean the character strengths such as effort and diligence and grit that's needed to maximize your performance on a particular endeavor. And that mm-hmm. endeavor could be artistic, athletic, academic.
So it's really sort of stick-to-itiveness, perseverance, that kind of thing.
That's exactly right.
So give us an example of what you see there at Roxbury Prep.
So what I think you see happening at Roxbury Prep is this incredible sort of focus on this message that effort determines success. Mm. And so every week at Roxbury Prep, the students, which is a middle school, the students participate in advisory, where there's a lot of opportunity to practice a particular skill or a particular academic area. And then every week, at the end of the week, there's a community meeting, which is an opportunity for performance. And I think what you see when you look at the advisory experience and the community meeting experience together is that students are practicing in advisory what they are then performing each week at community meeting. And I think the goal of the school is to really strongly underscore this idea that the effort you put into preparing, like the perseverance that you demonstrate, the grit that you demonstrate in preparing, pays off in a professional and polished performance. Mm. And so probably the best example of that is that the school has something that they call the powerful speaking extravaganza.
Mm, I wanted to ask you about this. This is a great example.
Yeah.
Actually.
So one of the community meetings is the powerful speaking extravaganza. And I should say that what happens before that is all the preparation. And so all of the students in the school choose a reading that they're going to perform. It could be a poem. It could be the lyrics to a song. It could be a dialogue that they're doing with a partner from a scene from a play. And in their advisory for not just 1 week, but 5 or 6 weeks, they're practicing those performances. And they're really focusing on everything from the tone, eye contact, you know, affect, you know, and so volume and so on and so forth. And then so all that practice happens in advisory, and they're getting feedback from their classmates, they're getting feedback from their advisory teacher. And then on the day of the powerful speaking extravaganza, all of the students are, you know, are in the same auditorium for community meeting, and they have a hat with all of the names of the sixth graders, all of the names of the seventh graders, all of the names of the eighth graders, and they pick a name out of the hat. And if you get chosen, you know, you get riotous applause, and you perform your piece in front of the entire school community. And in addition to that, you then get feedback on your performance from three judges who are actually members of the community who have come in to offer their feedback. And
so one of the sort of fascinating conclusions, or sort of, you know, the payoff, I guess, about all of this, if you look at Boston Prep, Roxbury Prep, and Academy of the Pacific Rim Charter School, we're not talking about three schools that sort of aren't teaching the basics to focus on character. I mean, they're getting fantastic results on the MCAS, for example, mm-hmm. right? All three of them.
Absolutely.
And these are urban schools that cater largely to low-income folks. So how well are they doing?
These schools are very high-performing schools, and that was intentional. I wanted to look at three schools that were sort of unequivocally successful by, as measured by both standardized tests such as the MCAS, and also, you know, and in some ways much more importantly, by the matriculation rates of their students into college. Mm. And so all three of these schools demonstrate, you know, great success on the MCAS, comparable to some of the most affluent suburban communities in the state, and also very high percentages of their students going on to college.
Really impressive. But here's my question: how do we know that that's a result of teaching character? Because you also point out that these are three schools that have extended days, students wear uniforms, they're subjected to strict disciplinary codes. Might those approaches to running a school explain the success as much or more, perhaps, as a focus on character? So,
well, that's a great question. And I certainly think that I would never be making the argument that the only ingredient, you know, central to these schools' success is their focus on character. But what I think is really interesting at all three of these schools, and even though they've chosen to focus on different dimensions of character, mm-hmm. what's quite similar across them, is that by virtue of choosing to focus on character development as a core piece of what they're doing, they're able to infuse that focus throughout their school experience. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, so at Roxbury Prep, you know, if a student asks, like, why do I have to wear a uniform? You know, the answer from a teacher is going to be in the language of performance character. It's going to be explained to that student. The motivation behind our uniform policy has to do with, you know, what it means to be a professional and to deliver a professional performance. You know, likewise, if a student is sent to the dean's office for misbehavior at the Boston Preparatory Charter School, the conversation about that student's misbehavior is going to be using the language of integrity, compassion, respect mm-hmm. that the school has worked to develop through its character education programming.
Yeah.
You know, and so I think that the school has sort of used character education, you know, to foster all of those other aspects of their school day that you referenced.
We're talking to Scott Sider about his book Character Compass. It's about three Boston public schools, charter public schools, that have made teaching character a big part of what they do. We'd like to hear from you. Do you think schools can and should teach character? Give us a call, 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. And Scott, we've got a bunch of people who'd like to get in on this conversation. So let's go to Fred, who's calling from Halifax. Hi, Fred, you're on the air.
I understand the idea of teaching character. As a matter of fact, given the lack of character that I find out in the general working populace, I don't doubt that it's a good thing. The problem that I have with it is any time you say morality, you're implying religiousness or religiosity. I mean, how is it different from putting the Ten Commandments on the wall?
All right, Fred, we'll take that question. Scott Sider, does teaching character equate with to religious morality by definition?
That's a great question. And I do think that when sort of terms like morality come up, we do instinctively link those to, you know, to ideas about religion, because for so many of us, our moral code is influenced by our religious background. And so I guess I think that is something to be mindful of. That said, Boston Prep, which is the school that's focused on moral character development, their five virtues, the five virtues that they sort of focus on in their ethics classes and in all other parts of the school day are courage, compassion, integrity, respect, and perseverance. And, you know, and at least several of those are, you know, compassion, integrity, respect, courage are sort of unequivocally moral character strengths, but but fairly uncontroversial, I'd say. I mean, I think that probably, you know, there would probably be few folks who would quibble with integrity as a character strength that we feel comfortable promoting.
Sure. Let's go to Jen, who's calling from Amesbury. Hi, Jen, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Yeah, I actually am a teacher. I've been teaching high school for many years. I taught for 10 years in an affluent suburban community north of Boston, and recently I had a teaching experience in a very urban district, which is really struggling right now in terms of its performance and all of that. And I do think that character is an important part of education. But what I noticed happening, I'm curious about your guests' take on this, in this effort to integrate it into curriculum, it has become kind of a rote checklist. Hmm. It really seems to have taken the life of a real discussion and delving into questions of integrity and morality, it's kind of taken that out of the classroom to some extent. It's become part of the checklist.
And Jen, it's a great point, and I'm really glad you put it on the table. Let me put it right to Scott Sider.
I think that's a great point also, and you know, and I think a way in which you and I probably agree with each other is that I'm very skeptical about sort of what I call character education in a box, you know, where a school system sort of sends away for a prepackaged curriculum that that purports to help that school with character education. And I think that what I liked about the three schools in my study, and this was intentional, was that all three, you know, none of them had sort of sent away for a character education program, but rather they had done what I call homegrown character education, where they'd sort of thought about what are the character strengths that mean the most to us as a community that we want to be our primary focus, and how can we integrate that into every aspect of our school day, our classes, our community meetings, our breakfast time, our dismissal, and so on and so forth. And how can we do that in a much deeper way? And so I'm in agreement with you.
But is what these three schools are doing, is it somehow replicable without falling into the trap that Jen is referring to, that it sort of becomes a rote checklist of this is how you teach character? I mean, are there some lessons from these three schools that are replicable?
Yeah, I think that's the way I like to think about this book that I've written is that I like to think of it as a blueprint for character education more than a template. And so, you know, I don't think it would make sense for any school to kind of say, oh, this is what Boston Prep does. They have ethical philosophy classes. Or this is what the Academy of the Pacific Rim does. They have a civics class in the senior year. And say, that's what we're going to do. But what I think that, you know, that Character Compass can do is introduce educators and other stakeholders to three different ways of thinking about character education, three different models of character education that can begin the conversation about, in our community, what do we most value? And importantly, and then sort of equally importantly, what is the dimension of character that we think the students in our community, the youth in our community, need the most support in fostering? And then I think, you know, as your caller sort of alluded to, the community needs to do the work of thinking about what are the most authentic ways for our community to work on those particular character strengths. And I think that I tried to go into substantial detail in the book about what the three different schools are doing to provide kind of ideas, and some of which might be quite relevant for schools, but it's not a template, it's a blueprint.
Scott, I want to talk to you a little bit about how the role of parents and what that is when it comes to character education with relationship to the schools that they send their kids to. But I think Paul, who's calling from Somerville, is going to pick up that point. Paul, you're on the air right now.
Thanks, Anthony. I was going to pick that up because I find myself questioning your guest in regard to when did it become okay to offload these critical teaching elements onto the schools. You know, it's a fairly common discussion point at this point. Where are the parents, and when did they...
Paul, I think we're losing you, but I think we take your point, and I'm reading a blurb from our producer in the studio. What's the role of parenting in building character in children that can't be fully taken out of the home? When did it become okay to offload this to schools?
It's an interesting question. I mean, I guess I would say that unequivocally, the primary source for character development for any youth is his or her parents, nuclear family, siblings. You know, I just think that that's absolutely sort of where the bulk of the character development work is happening in an individual's life. And I guess I think that rather than it being something new, I mean, character education is sort of happening whether we sort of give it that name or not all day long, right? I mean, the way in which teachers model what it means to be a professional, what it means to, you know, investigate a text, what it means to persevere on a math problem is modeling character education. And I think that the three, you know, so I think that all schools at all times are practicing character education, you know, and in a way that's complementary to what parents are doing, rather than picking up a responsibility that parents aren't handling themselves.
Scott, I want to read you a comment on Facebook from Charles McInerney. He writes, I've worked with plenty of people who went to wealthy schools who are lacking in character, too. So I hate to have this generalized that it's something only needed in low-income schools. Now, the three schools you looked at are inner-city charter schools, but I know you make the point in the book that this is also relevant to suburban school districts. You're not sort of saying character education just has to happen in the inner city. I mean, I know that's clear.
Absolutely, and I appreciate Charles for making that point, because, I mean, I very deliberately chose three schools that were extremely similar to each other for the purposes of the research study and for the purposes of having schools that could be compared to each other. But I absolutely agree with Charles that when we think it, when all kinds of schools, whether suburban, urban, rural, think about character development, my hope is that offering these three models of character development, one focused on moral, one focused on performance, one focused on civic, would allow lots of different types of schools to think to themselves, lots of different school communities to think to themselves, okay, what's the type of character that our students need the most help in fostering? And I can think of a number of suburban schools and independent schools, for that matter, also, who in fact maybe have stressed performance so much, have put so much of an emphasis on performance that it's actually having deleterious effects on students' moral character development, right? Mm. Unfortunately, when we look at the rates of cheating across the United States, of students who will unequivocally admit to having cheated within the last year, they are shockingly high. Mm. And so I think that in some cases, schools that are doing a great job on performance character, they're actually seeing in some ways that's unfortunately kind of, you know, the tangential effect is that it's negatively impacting moral character.
Is there a tension with this? You know, we mentioned No Child Left Behind, which I know we're sort of 15 years into, and standardized tests are now part of the landscape. But is there a tension between this focus on the tests and results and versus teaching kids character?
It's a good question. I mean, in some ways, I think it depends on the type of character that you're talking about. Mm-hmm. So, you know, on one hand, I think that a lot of the energy around character education right now has come in the performance character realm, sort of because of research that's suggesting that there's a real correlation between students who have high levels of grit and perseverance and students who perform well, both, you know, in the terms of their grade point average, in terms of their matriculation to college, in terms of their graduation to college. And so I think that the relationship between performance character and academics is a very complementary one. Yeah. I think that potentially, you know, sort of a school that makes the decision to spend more time emphasizing moral character and civic character, that may come in a sense, you know, just in a quantifiable way at the expense of focusing on sort of more academic subjects. And yet, you know, the point I always like to make is that, you know, it's easy to forget that just a few years ago, I feel like our country was brought to the brink of economic collapse as a result of the lack of moral character of sort of some of our leading right. business people right. and politicians. And, you know, and I think that those were folks who had very high levels of performance character, demonstrated enormous levels of grit and perseverance, but their commitment to integrity, their sense of social responsibility was lacking. And it had a dramatic impact on our country.
Indeed. I think that's a great sort of point to leave this conversation. There's a lot more to discuss, but I'm afraid we're out of time. But Scott Sider, thanks so much for coming in and having this important conversation with us. It's really been great. I appreciate it.
Thanks so much for having me.
That's Scott Sider. He's an assistant professor of education at Boston University. His latest book is Compass Character, How Powerful School Culture Can Point Students Toward Success. And you can find an excerpt from the book on our website at radioboston.org, where you can also continue this conversation. Listeners, stay with us. Coming up, we'll check in on what's been a pretty intense flu season here in New England and what you can do about it. I'm Anthony Brooks with Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston. You're skipping, tipping, slipping, flip. Try some more, and soon you're skating across the floor.